Hi and welcome back. I'm Patrick Polk and you're listening to The Rules of Investing. I'm very excited about this week's guest on the podcast, Robert Milner, Chairman of Washington H. Soul Pattinson, Australia's oldest listed company. While Soul Patt started out as a pharmacy in the 19th century, today it's a $6.5 billion diversified investment vehicle with significant stakes in New Hope, Brickworks, TPG and dozens of other smaller companies. Soul Patts, along with Ramsay Health Care, are the only two companies on the ASX that have increased their dividend every year for the past 20 years. In this week's episode, we'll discuss his view on the future of coal and agriculture in Australia, why he's not interested in buying the banks at current levels, and he tells us what he thinks has been the key to Soul Patts' success. Finally, if you're loving The Rules of Investing, then why not tell someone about it? Pick your favourite episode and send it to a friend, or just head on over to iTunes and hit subscribe. Either way, you're helping to increase the profile of the podcast and therefore the quality of the guests that I can bring to you. Well, that's it for now. I hope you enjoy the show. Hi Rob, welcome to the show.
Nice to talk to you.
You too. I've interviewed a few investors with a pretty long track record behind them before, but I don't think any of them would be able to challenge your record. You've been a director at Washington H. Soul Patts since 1984, I understand, and you took over as chairman from your uncle in 1998, who had himself been with the company for 30 years. But the history of Soul Patts goes back a lot further than that, of course, having been listed and incorporated over 100 years ago, and with roots that extend all the way back to 1872. So given this incredible history, I think the most burning question on my mind is, in that time, what's been your most successful investment?
You want one, but there's two that really stand out. I think obviously New Hope and TPG, which started as a TV station in Newcastle, a Channel 9 affiliate in Newcastle, that's how TPG started. But go back, I guess New Hope's probably the, and I think it's our cost base of about 4 cents a share, I think so.
And what's the current share price now?
Oh, it's about $4.20, I think it's $4.30. Yeah.
100 bagger, not too bad. What do you think you got right about, let's just focus on New Hope for now. What do you think you got right about that? And why do you think it went so well?
Well, it goes back a long time. It started as a small operation in Ipswich where we're still mining. And then in the late to middle 80s, we got involved in Indonesia through Graham Robinson, who was the managing director in those days. And we developed a big mine up there called Adaro. We developed that from scratch to 25 million tonnes when we sold that, and we'd always also put a port in as well. And then we bought $500 million Australian money back here and reinvested into Acland. We had some quite good exploration areas, and in the boom times, BHP paid us $2.5 billion for the Saraji deposit. And so we sat on cash for a long time. Then we went through another boom period, and everybody was asking us why we didn't invest and buy some more coal mines or do something with the cash. We waited our time till things came off a little bit, and we bought the first 40% of Bengala when thermal coal was $47 a tonne. It's now over $100. And then last year we bought the Wesfarmers 40% of Bengala. So we now own 70% of Bengala, and we're going to do a deal with Mitsui at the 1st of April. So we'll take that to 80%, and Taipower will have the other 20%. So it's been a very good investment for us over a long time. And it's actually, Soul Pattinson has received over $1 billion just in special dividends out of New Hope over that period of time. So it's been a wonderful investment.
Do you know how much you've invested in order to get the $1 billion of dividends that you paid?
Well, as I said, our cost base is 4 cents. And the reason why we owned so much of New Hope was when we were developing the Adaro mine, we were going through a downturn in the coal industry, and a bit similar to where we are at the moment, the banks wouldn't lend money. So Sol Pattinson had to top up to develop the Adaro mine. That's why we own 60% of New Hope. We now own 50%. So.
But it's turned out very well, obviously.
Oh, a wonderful investment.
Is there anything you think that could have been done better in that investment?
Well, you can always improve things. But I think we've done pretty well overall when you look at the performance. As I said, you can always... Harry Hindsight's a great man. There are always things you always come back and look at. Maybe you should have done this, maybe you should have done that. But overall, we've had very good people running it. And I think that's the other strength about Sol Pattinson. You're sitting in our boardroom at the moment. There's only 10 of us on the payroll at Washington Sol Pattinson. So it's very difficult if something does go wrong in one of these investments to send somebody out to try and fix it. So I think our ability over a long period of time has been able to pick good management, and we've had very good management in most of our good investments. Mm. We haven't always got it right. There's no doubt we've made some mistakes, but overall we've had a lot more winners than we've had losers.
Well, coal has actually been a bit of a hot button issue in this country, particularly over the last 6 months or so. There's been all the kerfuffle with Adani, and then there was another mine, I can't think of the name off the top of my head, but which was stopped in the courts. Obviously, as we've just discussed, you guys are the major shareholder of a thermal coal producer. So what do you think is the future for coal in Australia?
Well, obviously, if we want to continue to manufacture and the population continues to grow, as we build more apartments and more houses, people will have air conditioning units, etc., etc., you need baseload power. And the two cheapest forms of baseload power are coal and gas. And we're exporting all the gas we have, and we're not allowed to drill for gas in New South Wales and Victoria. And people all think that coal is bad, but they've built 720 of these new high-energy, low-emission coal plants around the world, which are 50% under the Paris emissions. And there's about 1,000 of these in the planning stage. So other people around the world are building these power stations. As I said, the Paris emissions, these people who are so-called experts have set targets for the Paris emissions, and these new coal-fired plants are 50% under that target. So that I can see no reason why we shouldn't be building them here.
So is it fair to say then that the investment case for coal probably stacks up regardless of what happens with coal power in Australia, even if we turned off all the coal power?
It's still the cheapest form of power. The other day when they had those three hot days in Victoria and Adelaide, South Australia, and we were told up here not to use our dishwashers and all these sorts of things, wind and solar on those 3 days contributed 4%, 4% of the total base power load, because the wind didn't blow and solar loses its efficiency over about 26 degrees. 4%. So if people still want to come home and turn the air conditioning on and have their lights on, you've got to get power from somewhere.
I'm curious, do you have a view on nuclear power in Australia and whether that has a role in that base load power distribution?
I think it's something we should be looking at, but unfortunately, and going through our coal experience in Japan, the negativity that's coming out of the Japanese about never building another nuclear power station is, I think, probably, again, is a concern for everybody. But going back again on a cost basis, it's probably the lowest form of energy, nuclear. But you know, you've got to get people around that. What horrifically happened in Japan, unfortunately, you know, you don't want that happening again. So, it's a pity, because you know, we've got a lot of uranium here. So.
There seems to be a lot of NIMBYism that goes on with nuclear power. Yeah, everybody likes the power but doesn't want to be anywhere near it.
Well, as I can say for a fact that they're actually building more coal-fired power stations in Japan now rather than nuclear ones.
So I know you actually grew up and worked on a farm for a number of years. What do you think the future of agriculture is in Australia?
Well, when I was eight, my parents, who were city people, bought a property out at Cowra, and I was at school at the time and stayed at school in Sydney, and then worked with a stockbroker when I first left school, and then went back out and worked on the land in my early 20s. And it wasn't until I was in my early 30s that I came back and was involved with Sol Pattinson. So I've had a lot of experience out there, and now I've put together quite a large rural holding, which includes irrigation and what I call high ground, where I just run cattle. And as you said, there's some interesting facts and figures coming out around the agricultural sector with water, and unfortunately we're going through a very lean, dry period at the moment. And you know, one of those, well, a couple of those properties I've got are actually on the Lachlan River, which is I'm very fortunate. You know, I do irrigate at the moment, and selling a lot of hay at high prices and growing crops, etc. But there's a dam, Wangler Dam, on the top of the Lachlan River, and if it wasn't there, the Lachlan River would be dry at the moment, and the gum trees that have been there for hundreds of decades, they're still there. And there's a lot of, again, as we were talking about with climate change, there's a lot of misinformation about what's happening with water in the rural areas. This is a very, very bad period of drought, some of the worst in living memory. So it's just unfortunate. But again, if you look on the positive side, we've got to feed the world. You know, the world's growing. You look at what the Chinese, for example, and I know I had a lot of experience when we were developing that coal mine in Adaro, because we went into the jungle, there was nothing there, and we watched a village grow and a small town evolve around this mine. And people that used to live on catfish and rice came in and worked on the mine, they earned income, so a shop came available, they had chips, Coke, and then the biggest department stores came in, and they were able to buy meat from Australia or meat from New Zealand. So watching these sort of things develop, then agriculture is going to play a very important part in feeding the world going forward.
You mentioned, of course, that we're at the boardroom of Soul Paths, yeah, which is at 160 yeah. Pitt Street. You guys sold this building a couple of years ago. So I'd love to hear what was the motivation behind that.
Well, as you mentioned a couple of years ago, well, probably even going back 12 months ago, property values in Sydney were pretty stretchy. Someone came to us offering, wanted to know whether we would sell it. We had a good think about it, and then we just decided to put it on the market. We got an incredible offer. There's a couple of reasons why we, in the end, decided to sell. We were thinking that as we grow the business, there's more and more people working in this building. It's not a terribly friendly environment to work, because we've got people on different levels and there's a lot of rooms. It's not a sort of open planning. And then the other main consideration, which I thought about, was the with George Street, with the monorail going up there, and walking home some nights through the Strand Arcade, there seems to be more people now in George Street than there are in the mall. So whether the property values in the mall will fall over time, I don't know, but we've got the highest per square metre price ever in the CBD. So
That's incredible. Yeah, it's
we've only been here for 143 years then.
Well, do you know what the cost basis for the building was when you first bought it?
No, I don't.
So it was just a matter of receiving a price that you were very happy with and wanting to expand. Well, I was looking over the Soul Paths portfolio earlier, and one of the things that stuck out to me is that the portfolio is actually quite concentrated. Why is that?
Well, as I said, we've been an investment house. You know, we have about 10 people working in our actual, what we call, head office, but we also have an investment bank. We have about 12 or 14 people upstairs in the investment bank. So we've always been investors, and as I mentioned before, we've always backed good people to run these businesses. And at the moment we've got sort of three main businesses, which are New Hope Brickworks and TPG. And then we have some smaller businesses, API. We have a very large $600 million equity portfolio. And then we've come down to some other smaller businesses, which in time we would like to think that could be the APIs or the TPGs of the world, where these other businesses all started from. So, you know, a company called TPI, where there's only 8 morphine licenses in the world. We're a large shareholder in that business. We think that's going to grow. As I said, there's only 8 licenses in the world. And TPI has a massive cost advantage on our other competitors.
Where does that arise from? They do it with
treat the product with water, where everyone else treats it with chemical. So we've got a massive cost advantage. And then we're very favourable to financial services. We think that's an area that's going to grow, even though the Royal Commission has sort of thrown a bit of a a spanner in the works at the moment with confusion and what people should be doing and what shouldn't be doing there. But in fact, it's about under $3 trillion in superannuation money at the moment. And the figures going forward are talking about $7 to $8 trillion in superannuation.
So really just trying to capture the growth of that superannuation.
There's probably $4 or $5 trillion coming forward in super in the next 10 or 12 years. So there's a lot of money.
Someone's going to have to invest.
And it hasn't. People haven't had their money very well managed for a long period of time by a lot of these people. So I think there's an avenue for good people to run people looking after their money rather than making money for themselves. I'm not against people. People always got to make money, but you've got to look after people's money that you're managing first. That's the most important thing, because if you didn't have their money, they wouldn't have a business.
In the early days of Berkshire Hathaway, Buffett famously said that he liked to buy cigar butt stocks. So very cheap, not necessarily high quality businesses, to get one last puff on the butt. In the last probably 2 to 3 decades, he and Charlie, particularly since Charlie came into the fray, have focused more on high quality businesses that can produce and reinvest large amounts of capital. So I'm curious where you fall on this on the scale. Would you prefer to buy really cheap stocks, or would you prefer to buy compounders that can reinvest large amounts of capital, or something else altogether?
I think you've got to be wary of cycles. As I mentioned before, New Hope were very, very strong and didn't pay silly prices at the top of the cycle. Sol Patterson has always had cash, and that's why we were able to buy the TV station after Christopher Skase and Alan Bond destroyed TV stations in Australia. These are examples of having cash and moving in at the right time. And you talk about stocks. I can remember in the GFC that we had 10 or 12 years ago, I can remember paying $27 for Commonwealth Bank. We were buying TPG for 14 cents. So we've always had cash. So when other people are unfortunately have to sell things, and you know, we're sitting there with cash, and we're able to move very quickly on something when we can.
Looking to be opportunistic.
Yeah,
then,
I guess that's probably the word, yeah.
There's a lot of different opinions on how you value a business. Some people use PE ratios, some people look at the book value of the assets, others still use discounted cash flow. Yeah. So to you, what's the best way of measuring value in a business?
Well, as I tried to explain before, obviously the best businesses you buy when people are distressed. And that's one of Buffett's great philosophy as well. So, you know, obviously you get a downturn in the market. As I mentioned before, as an example, when we paid $27 for Commonwealth Bank shares, you would have bought those probably on a P of 10 or 11 or whatever it was in those days. And you know, when you look at our portfolio, we've got a very large holding in Brambles, for example, and their cost base is $1.02 a share. Macquarie Bank, our cost base is large, you know, very large investment there, $10.77. So we've been, you know, you don't go in and buy stocks at, you know, to me, you don't buy Macquarie Bank at the moment at $128 or $130. If you wait till there's a downturn in the market, if you can pick them up again at $100 or $90, you've done well. And that's where I think I've tried to make the point before about being patient. And obviously, all those other metrics come into your evaluation there with your PEs. And obviously, as I said, the main thing we look at when we're buying businesses, not stocks, is cash generation. As I said, we need cash generation so we can then pay dividends. And that's one of the reasons why we've been able to pay increased dividends since we listed, because we've always been able to find businesses that generate good cash.
So rather than focusing hard on a single metric, you're looking more at being counter-cyclical and looking for that cash generation.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, we've sold assets at the top of the market. So, you know, again, if people think there's a good deal for them, it's the top of the market, we think it's the top of the market, we're happy to sell. And then if you want to buy back in again, you've got that opportunity later. But the old saying is, you know, you buy right, you know. You sell at the top of the market and buy at the bottom of the market.
You seem to buy a lot more often than you sell. Is that a fair statement?
We've been happy to sell. We've sold some operations. I said we sold that Saraji exploration area to BHP for a lot more money than people thought it was worth. We've just sold the building here Brickworks has sold some sole patents and shares. We're not against selling.
So you're just waiting for the buyer to come along and offer you a price that's basically too good to refuse.
Yeah. If someone wants to make an offer for something, we'll always consider it. As I've said before, and my wife won't like this, I've said before, it's been out in the public before, I said, everything's for sale except your wife.
You guys have an incredible track record here at Soul Pats, and I'd be curious to know what you think is, what's the key or keys to that outstanding long-term wealth creation? Because I believe you've got some figures here, but 17.3% compounded over 40 years.
40 years.
40 years. What do you think the key to that is? What do you do differently?
Patience. As I said, we've always been in a position, we've had cash, we've been able to move at the right time. And I think probably our biggest strength, as I mentioned before, is having good people running those businesses. Because as I said before, I can't send somebody out here to try and fix a coal mine. We haven't got the people. But we haven't always been successful. We've had a few businesses that haven't gone our way, but generally speaking, to get those returns, we've done very well.
Well, what about those ones that don't go your way then? Would you prefer to be cutting them as soon as you see a problem, or you're not going in there trying to fix problems when you come across them?
Generally speaking, we buy something because we like the business and we like the people running it. And obviously, if it goes bad or we've picked the wrong management, well, we have to try and exit at that. But it's only happened less than a handful of times. So that's life. It's like everybody's got a portfolio. If 20 stocks in a portfolio, not every one of them does well.
What are some of the characteristics and what are you looking for in a great management team? Because it can be a pretty difficult thing to assess for a lot of people, I think.
And I keep saying to people, it's about people. It's people, people, people. Unless you have good people running a business, someone can destroy a business very, very quickly. And it's very difficult to turn that business around again. But what intrigues me is when I go around a brick plant, or I go to a part of a coal mine, or I go to some of the other part of the businesses, when these managers talk about their plant, they take ownership in it. It's not Brickworks plant, they say it's my plant. So these guys, and a lot of good people have been in the businesses for 15, 20 years. We've just bought the fourth largest brick making business in America, and some of those people there, I was over there 5 weeks ago, some of the people have been there for 30, 40 years. It's their company, they've grown up with this company it's not Glengarry, it's their business, and I think that's what you need to try and generate with these people, and it all comes from the top, with your good CEOs and managing directors and finance people, is get skin in the game, make sure they own some shares, so as I said, it then becomes part of their life and their employment and their financial return at the end of the day, because the better the company can do, if they've got shares in the company, the better they're going to do.
That same ownership mentality that obviously you guys reflect here in your own business.
Yeah, we're large shareholders of Soul Pattinson. The family have always been large shareholders.
You guys have been increasing your dividends here every year over the last 20 years, at least. That was as far back as the records I could find. I'm guessing it's probably a lot longer than that, though.
Well, the company's been listed since 1903. The company's never failed to pay a dividend, even through the Depression years, the war years, and the GFC. And over the last 20 years, I think it is, we've been able to increase that dividend each half. And there's only two of us in the market, Ramsay Corporation and us, that have been able to increase dividends each half since the GFC.
Yeah, I actually did a bit of research on this a few years ago, looking at dividend aristocrats. There's a handful of them in America, but very, very, as you said, I think Washington H. Soul Pattinson is actually the only one with a 20-year.
Ramsay
have they done 20 years now?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
I think there's six or eight companies that have paid a dividend but haven't increased them.
Yeah.
They've maintained their dividend through that period, and Brickworks is one of those.
Yeah. Well, I can't help but notice that a number of the businesses in your portfolio are actually quite cyclical, particularly, you've mentioned financial companies and commodity producers. Obviously, through the vagaries of a cycle, it can be it can be pretty difficult to predict the kind of earnings that you're going to get out of something like a commodities producer. So how do you maintain and increase the dividends so consistently when you've got those cyclical businesses in the portfolio?
Well, we're very fortunate. The businesses that we invest in, we look to that they are cash generating businesses, because as you mentioned, we have to pay a dividend to our shareholders, so we need to receive dividends from those companies. And you take Brickworks, for example. We've been able to insulate Brickworks from just becoming a pure and simply building products company to a company that now has three legs to it. Building products, has a massive land bank, and it has its investment in Soul Pattinson. So over the years, as the cities have grown, the brick pits, the clay reserves, were in the cities. So the first one in Sydney was at St Peters. So as the urban sprawl grows, you generate a lot of money from the land. So we've set up this joint venture with Goodman's on the industrial, and it's now worth $1.5 billion. So we generate income from that. So that's insulated Brickworks from the cycles of the building products. And as I mentioned, they're one of the six or eight companies that have been able to maintain a dividend each of the last 20 years as well. Mm. So
obviously we've got an election coming up in a few months' time. And at this stage...
Well, one on Saturday.
Yeah, sorry. I'm from Melbourne, so I'd, forgotten that you guys had an election coming up. But there's a federal election in a few months too. And at this stage, it's looking likely that Labor will probably be the new government. And they've made it pretty clear that they intend to implement some changes to franking credits. Yep. Obviously, Soul Patts has a pretty big franking balance. Yep. And pays out fully franked dividends. So how do you think the proposed changes would affect Soul Patts' dividends and the policy?
Well, at this stage, it won't affect us because you saw what happened in the previous reporting period. We as I said, we report on Thursday, so we're a month out of kilter with most other companies. The investment companies paid some special dividends back out because as an investment company, they were getting special dividends in from other investments in. But some companies did pay out franking credits. We won't, at this stage, pay out any franking credits unless there's a change in the company tax rate, which what happened before when they reduced the company tax rates from 34% down to 30%. Companies paid out those franking credits. But if there's a change in company tax, we will, but at the moment we won't. No one really knows what percentage of shareholders are in these small super funds that look as though they're going to be affected by the changes in them.
Yeah, and there's a lot of
election,
them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them too. All the big funds get all the attention, but there's an incredibly long tail of these tiny little super funds that manage incredibly small sums of capital. They definitely seem subscale. I was looking at an interview you did with Matthew Kidman about 15 years ago. At the time, it was funny actually, you mentioned how attractive it was buying bank stocks at a yield of 7 or 8%, which I think you were referring to an older period then, I think when you bought them back in the 90s. I can't help but notice that some of the banks are back to yielding around 7 or 8%. When I was looking last week, NAB, for example, was, I think, 7.9% fully franked. So given that the banks are at that level, would you consider buying them?
Not at the moment. As I said, I think the share market's pretty toppy. And two, I think we've still got uncertainty about what's going to come out of this Royal Commission. And obviously, as you mentioned before, if there's a change of government, I'm pretty sure the Labor Party will continue to drive this Royal Commission into the banks further. So I think there's probably quite a big chance that some of those, the share market could come lower, and if that happens, the bank stocks will probably come lower. But they're great businesses. They're some of the strongest banks in the world. People forget that.
Is any of it about fears about a housing market downturn and what it could do to the banks, or is that not part of your reasoning at all?
Well, going back to the Royal Commission, what's happened is there's virtually been a credit crunch or a credit squeeze caused by the banks and caused by the Royal Commission. I know through the building industry that there's more than 50% slowdown in loans. And the paperwork that you have to go through, even someone like myself has to go through to, if you wanted to get a loan, it's how much do I spend on groceries a week, and, or how much is my, do I spend at the pub, etc., etc. And unfortunately, this has flowed right through to the whole business community. It's not only the banks, it's flowed into all businesses. So we're seeing this credit squeeze, which is unfortunate because there's only been a handful of people in the financial services industry and the bank industry which has caused this, but virtually the whole economy now has been affected by this, which is I think in 6 or 12 months time you'll see this really impact on our Australian economy, particularly if there's a change in government.
How is that affecting demand for things like bricks? Are you guys seeing that at Brickworks, slowdown in the housing market?
Yeah. Not as much in Victoria, but it's really slowed down here.
Do you think Victoria is a bit behind where New South Wales is, or is it more, or does it just not seem as severe there?
Not as severe at this stage. Mm.
Well, you have a well-publicised and long-term cross-shareholding with Brickworks. So they own a portion of Soul Patts, and Soul Patts owns a portion of them. You've said in the past that the reason for taking on that cross-shareholding was to protect you against corporate raiders, such as the SCASAs and the bonds that we were discussing earlier. So given that the era of the corporate raider feels as though it's largely ended now, would you ever consider ending the cross-shareholding with Brickworks?
Not at this stage. As you mentioned, it was set up by generations ago to stop those corporate raiders. But if you look at the present situation, as I mentioned before, it's a wonderful investment for Brickworks. It smooths out their earnings. They have that, and it's now the biggest contributor to their profit, their investment in Soul Pattinson. And as I said, Soul Pattinson is an investment house. And if you go back over time and have a look at the return we've got out of our investment in Brickworks, it's been a wonderful investment for our shareholders as well. That's one of the reasons we've been able to have that 17.3 compound growth, because of these investments. And it's been a very good investment for us. So we're happy sitting on the cross-shareholding at this stage.
So it's clearly a mutually beneficial situation for shareholders of both.
Yeah. And both companies' share prices are at record levels. We're producing record profits, so it hasn't affected us.
Well, that's actually the main part of the interview done. But if you're okay to hang around for another 10 minutes or so, I've got three favourite questions that I like to ask every single guest. So, first of all, could you share with us something that you've read recently? it could be a book, an article, or a piece of research that you thought was really interesting or really impressive.
Obviously, in my position, I do a lot of reading. On that question, there's nothing that in particular that stands out, but I think all the reading that I do at the moment that disturbs me the most is just talk about climate change, and you know, people talking about the Darling River never going to run again, and all these sorts of scaremongering tactics that are being used around the place at the moment to scare people. You know, America had, before the 18th century, had 4 million people in it. There's 300 million people live in America now. The population is growing. People fly around the world in aeroplanes, drive cars, and build roads and things. So there's got to be a difference in the climate. I think that's probably one of the most disturbing things, that people just don't rationally think what's happening. You know, they think it's just because of coal, or because of its gas, or because of this. It's the population growing.
Do you think?
I don't know how you stop it. You know, where everybody's conscious, and we're very conscious. For example, in Brickworks, we're using natural gas in some of our brick plants. We've just bought out roof tiles from Spain that we're now selling to put on a roof instead of those dreadful contraptions you put on your roof. You're actually now able to put actual roof tiles into your roof, so you can't tell the difference. So all these sorts of things. So when you put those new roofs in, you can put a solar battery or a battery in your house, so even you can run your own power or electricity or water or whatever you'd like to do with it. So we're not anti-renewables. Renewables have a place, but they're never going to take the base load power. And you've only got to look at all of the, you know, the companies here that have left the industry because they can't afford the power. And that's what surprises me, is the average person in the street doesn't realise they're paying probably $700 to $1,500 a year more. In America, on that new brick plant we bought, in Australian dollar terms, they are paying $3.30 a kilojoule for gas, and we are paying $11 a kilojoule for gas. Plus, we are paying higher electricity charges as well. So it can't go on. Something's going to happen, but what worries me, when everybody realises that the lights go out, it's going to be too late to turn around and build a gas-fired power station or a coal-fired power station to replace it, because it's going to take you 5 or 6 years to do it. That's what concerns me the most, and I think with what I read, I think that's one of the most disturbing things that concerns me.
If you could go back in time to when you were finishing school and give yourself a piece of investing advice, obviously your investing has gone pretty well since then, but if you had the opportunity to give a young Rob Milner one piece of advice, what would it be?
Patience and common sense.
So before I go any further, I always like to add a little bit of a disclaimer in here. Don't try this at home. We're not actually suggesting that anyone goes out and puts all of their money into a single investment and forget about it for 5 years. This is just supposed to be an exercise in long-term thinking and, of course, a little bit of fun. So with that being said, if the market were to close for 5 years starting tomorrow and you could only own shares in one company, what would it be?
I'd have to say Soul Pattinson. One, one, because I know it, and two, that, and this is what we're all aiming to do, continue to grow that compound rate at 17.3%. So I don't think there's many other investments that could compete, and it gives you the diversity that Soul Pattinson does. Right. And I'm very grateful for the people over the long period of time that have been able to manage these investments for us, and so without them, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Well, Rob, it's been great to chat with you. Thanks for sharing your thoughts and sitting down with me today.
Thank you. It's been great to have a chat with you.